Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Lord of the Rings AMA podcast. My name is Matthias Austin, and on this podcast, I invite you to ask me anything about Lord of the Rings, The Hobbit, or anything related to the greater legendarium of J.R.R. Tolkien, and I will do my best to give you as in-depth an answer as I can. And if you want to submit a question, you can email me at lotramapod@gmail.com, just like this week's question asker, Cassie from Illinois. Cassie writes, "Hi, Matthias. Hello. Loving your pod. Thank you. In your Mythology of Middle-earth episode, you said that elves and men are called children of Iluvatar, but dwarves are a different thing. So what are the dwarves?" Well, hello, Cassie, and thank you for your question. The background on dwarves is fascinating, and their origin is also wrapped up in the origins of two other groups of speaking creatures, Ents and Eagles, and we'll get into all of that as well. As Cassie mentioned, in Episode 3, What is the Creation Mythology of Middle-earth, the Ainur joined in the great music of Iluvatar, which then became a vision of the history of the whole world, and much of the music centered on the two children of Iluvatar, elves, the firstborn, and men, the secondborn. But no mention was made of dwarves. And in that episode, we also learned that the vision was something that the Ainur who chose to enter into Arda, or the world, they became the Valar and the Maiar, they would work to create that vision. So they went down into Arda and physically created the world, mountains, oceans, plants, animals, all of it. And Melkor, who would later be named by Feanor Morgoth, attempted to hamper everything they did. He struck down the Pillars of Light and plunged Middle-earth into darkness, while the Valar withdrew to the land of Aman and created the two trees that gave off light and waited, fearing that any action they took to stop Melkor would harm the not-yet-seen children of Iluvatar. And that was about, everything I just said there was about half an hour of lore condensed into a few minutes. So if you haven't listened to Episode 3, and that sounded interesting, go back and listen to it. But our story today takes place in that lull between the Valar when they retreated to Aman and before the elves awoke beneath the stars in Quivienen. See, the Vala Aule grew restless. Aule was the great smith, the Vala of Earth, and he was the one who built the mountains of the world. He liked to make things. He was always crafting, and he decided he was tired of waiting for the children to arrive, and he wanted to take matters into his own hands. And so Aule created the Seven Fathers of the Dwarves. And knowing he was working in a way that Iluvatar might not approve of, and the other Valar as well, he made them in a secret hall under the mountains in the darkness of Middle-earth. And he had seen the vision of the music, so he knew roughly what the children of Iluvatar were supposed to look like, but outside of the timeless halls of Iluvatar, the vision was cloudy, so he got most of the details right. They were bipedal, they didn't have scales or a tail, they had heads, that sort of thing, but they weren't quite what elves and men were. They were shorter and stockier and more muscly. And Aule made them to be able to withstand the power of Morgoth. And so, and this is going to be quoting from the Silmarillion, he made them stone-hard, stubborn, fast in friendship and in enmity, and able to suffer toil and hunger and hurt of body more heartily than all other speaking peoples. And Aule gave them long life, but not immortality like the elves. And in the darkness of the mountain hall, he began to teach the dwarf fathers a language he had created called Khuzdul, the secret language of the dwarves. Now, the difficult thing about trying to hide something from the omniscient god of the universe is that he's the omniscient god of the universe. And so Iluvatar knew everything that Aule was doing. And he spoke directly to Aule's mind and asked him just what exactly he thought he was up to. Now, beyond the fact that Aule was trying to fast-track Iluvatar's music, what he was trying to do was literally impossible, because only Iluvatar could create life. And Iluvatar pointed that out to Aule, and he said, "Hey, the dwarves, they move and speak when you're thinking about them and directing them to do things, but if your mind wanders, the dwarves just freeze in place. They weren't living beings." they were automatons. Now, this gets into complicated philosophical and theological areas because, like, okay, so animals were alive, and the Valar created many of the animals. So Iluvatar was probably not just referring to the idea of being alive, but the idea of having a soul. And I'm neither a philosopher or a theologian, or really even a Tolkien scholar, but I can tell you that there are Reddit forums full of this topic about what constitutes life and soul and what separates elves and men and dwarves from other living creatures. So Google that, or Bing it, or whatever you DuckDuckGo it away to your heart's content if you want to dive into all of the philosophical forums about what life means in Middle-earth. But the point is, the dwarves were not their own people. They were merely extensions of Aule's thoughts and actions. And upon being caught in the act, Aule responded like this. I'm going to read out the whole response because it's written in that sort of high speech of the Silmarillion. It's almost like a King James Bible flair. It's just kind of fun to hear. So I'm going to read out a big chunk of that. Aule says to Iluvatar, "I did not desire such lordship. I desired things other than I am, to love and to teach them, so that they too might perceive the beauty of Ea, Ea's the universe, which thou hast caused to be. For it seemed to me that there is great room in Arda for many things that might rejoice in it, yet it is for the most part empty still and dumb, and in my impatience I have fallen into folly. Yet the making of things is in my heart from my own making by thee. And the child of little understanding that makes a play of the deeds of his father may do so without thought of mockery, but because he is the son of his father. But what shall I do now, so that thou be not angry with me forever? As a child to his father, I offer to thee these things, the work of the hands which thou hast made. Do with them what you wilt. But should I not destroy the work of my presumption?" And so Aule, to summarize all of that, he's basically saying, look, I know I messed up here. I shouldn't have do this. I didn't want them to just be extensions of myself, but to see your universe that you created and to be able to appreciate the beauty of Middle Earth and of the world. And yes, I messed up, but I mean, I have this innate desire to create, and I have that because you have that, and you put that into me. So, I mean, I messed up, but I messed up in the way that a child messes up if they're just imitating their dad. So, I mean, he's not really pushing the blame onto Iluvatar, but he's trying to justify, look, I made things because you made me want to make things. That's in my being. And you know what? If I messed up, that's my bad. Here. You can take them. Do whatever you want with them. Or, you know, better yet, I'll just destroy them right now because I shouldn't have made them. And I do think that this is, going back into the philosophy sort of side of things, this is such a interesting and important argument that Aule is making. Because this is kind of the exact same thing that Morgoth wanted to do when he was seeking for the flame imperishable in the void before Ea, before Arda was made. But Morgoth and Aule's motivations are so different. See, Morgoth wanted to create things of his own outside of Iluvatar's will in order to control them and bind them to his will. Aule did it because he wanted to have things to love and teach and share the world that Iluvatar had made. He didn't do it for his own benefit. So they were doing the same thing, but their motivations were drastically different. I do want to take a little bit of a tangent here to talk about Tolkien's philosophy, because what he writes with Aule here was his view about humanity. See, Tolkien, he was a Catholic, devout Catholic, monotheistic, there is one God, very Book of Genesis, man was made in God's image. And Tolkien viewed God as the creator. The first thing we see in the Bible is that God created the heavens and the earth. And Tolkien also sees that man is made in God's image. Humanity is made in God's image. And he believes that within humanity, we have that same innate desire to create. the same desire that God has, because we are made in God's image. And his view was that we are, he called it sub-creators, this idea that we don't create anything really. We can't create in the same way that God creates, but we can sub-create. We can, in our own way, make things. And it's our desire to make things. For Tolkien, it's why he wrote all his stories, because he had this innate desire within him to tell stories that point to what he believed was a certain truth. Now, you don't have to agree with Tolkien to like his books and his writings, but he put that philosophy here in this story of Aule. Aule is the creator. He's the smith because Ilúvatar is the creator. And so the idea of wanting to make something is not wrong. Aule's motivations, his desires, are not wrong. It is within him to build, to create. It's what he does with that motivation that determines whether it's right or wrong. He wanted to do it because it would show the glory of Ea, of the universe, to new people. Morgoth wanted to do it so he could bind things to his will and control them. And Aule never wanted to set himself up as a rival to Ilúvatar. He wanted to make things that would reflect Ilúvatar's glory. Morgoth wanted to create him, make himself a mini Ilúvatar running everything. I could go off on a tangent here too, a tangent of this tangent, to why I also believe that this thought process is why I think Tolkien would absolutely despise AI art. If you're one of my family members listening to this, you have heard me, I guess you could charitably say, rant about AI art in the past. But for Tolkien, it would be this idea of, well, nobody's creating it. Nobody is utilizing this, in his view, this aspect of the divine, this divine urge to create. All they're doing is just putting some lines of code in and something appears. There's no sub-creative urge in that. Nobody's putting the work in to do it. Things are just appearing, and they're appearing to serve a usually, nowadays, a commercial purpose. It's not art, it's commerce. And that is not what creation, in Tolkien's worldview, is meant to be about. Now, I have to stop myself because, again, I've been told I come off a bit strong on this topic. So I'm going to stop it there, and I'm going to return to the story. But the whole point of all of that is to say that what Aule was doing, the desire to create, was not wrong. It was a desire that came from Ilúvatar. But Aule recognized, unlike Morgoth, Aule recognized what he did maybe wasn't the best way to go about doing it, even if his motivations were correct. And so Aule, realizing what he did was wrong, even if his intentions were good, he offers to destroy the dwarves he had created. And it says he weeping, he lifts his hammer to smash them to pieces. But as he does that, the dwarves, they bow down and they start begging for mercy, which is something that Aule did not tell them to do. Because Ilúvatar had compassion on Aule. And for the first time of only like a handful, maybe three, first time of only maybe three times, Ilúvatar directly intervened into the affairs of Arda, and he granted the dwarves life. Independent life. Minds of their own. Wills of their own. Something Aule couldn't do, Ilúvatar gifted to the dwarves. Aule, he thanks Ilúvatar, and he asks Ilúvatar, hey, these are yours now. You can change them, do whatever you would like with them to best suit your purposes. But Ilúvatar tells him that while he had mercy on Aule and the dwarves, beyond giving them a soul, he would not make any changes to Aule's work. And he also told Aule that he would not let the dwarves awake before the elves, because the elves were meant to be the firstborn. And he also told Aule that when the dwarves did awake, they were Aule's responsibility, and that they would often be in strife between Aule's children and Ilúvatar's. And then the dwarf fathers were put into a deep sleep and placed beneath mountains scattered across Middle-earth. Now, this next detail is something Tolkien never really committed to, and he kept changing his mind exactly how it worked. But it seemed that either Aule made wives for six of the Dwarf Fathers, and then got tired and didn't make a seventh, or else Iluvatar himself created six wives, and because he was copying Aule's design, made him look exactly like the men, beards and all. But he left one, the eldest dwarf, Durin, by himself. Now I'm going to come back to the dwarves, but since they won't wake up for a while, I'll stick to telling the story chronologically. And we're about to get a glimpse into the turbulent marriage of Aule and his wife, Yavanna. Yavanna was the Vala who had made most of the plants and animals of Middle-earth, and many of these had gone into like a pseudo-hibernation in the darkness of Middle-earth because, you know, the pillars had gone away and the light from the trees was not reaching Middle-earth. So most of the world is in darkness. Most of the plants and animals have gone into like a hibernation. They're kept in stasis. And after all this stuff with the dwarves happen, Aule finally confesses to Yavanna what he has done. And she was not happy. She worried that because he had kept them a secret, the children of Aule would have only his traits, loving the works of their own hands and not caring about nature except as resources for their forges. She thought that if they had worked together on this, they could have come up with some children that maybe wouldn't just destroy and chop down trees, but have respect for nature. Well, Aule's response to this was really that all of the children of Iluvatar are going to do this. Elves and men would also have dominion over nature to do with whatever they wanted. Yavanna goes to Manwë, king of the Valar, and demanded to know if this was true, which Manwë did confirm. And she was distraught because she feared everything she made would be destroyed by the children of Iluvatar. And Manwë asked what she wanted him to do about it, and her response was that she wanted nature to have a voice and an ability to protect itself. And Manwë was a little taken aback by this, but said, okay, so if they had a representative, what would you most like them to have? And she thought about it and said, okay, so animals, or Kelvar, have the ability to flee from danger, but plants, or Olvar, don't. And out of all of the plants, she loved trees the most, so she wanted trees to have a voice. Manwë then, he communes with Iluvatar in his mind. He kind of goes into his mind palace, or I guess his mind temple, and talks to Iluvatar. And Iluvatar lets him hear the music again. And to his amazement, he heard that in the music, he can hear voices singing from deep within the forests of Middle-earth. So he returns to Yavanna, and he told her that when the elves awake, spirits from afar would come and enter into both Kelvar and Olvar, and they would have speech and power. And these would be the Ents and the Eagles. And Yavanna was thrilled and said that she was going to make the best trees for the Eagles to live in. But Manwë told her no, his eagles, they would act as his emissaries and also report to him all of the things they saw and heard as they rode the winds high above Middle-earth. They would live in the mountains created by Aule. Now, as a note here, spirits from afar, that term, most likely means Maiar would be coming from the Timeless Halls and embody themselves within trees and eagles, in much the same way that Gandalf and the other wizards were Maia, embodied into old men, or Melian was a Maia who took on a physical form. So the Ents and the Eagles, they wouldn't be children of Iluvatar in the same way that elves, men, and dwarves now would be. They would be more similar to, like Gandalf or the wizards. So Yavanna, she goes back to Aule after hearing this, and she told him that his dwarves better be careful because the forests were going to be protected. And his response was simply, nonetheless, they will have need of wood, and he went on with his smith work. So, yeah, that marriage maybe isn't built on mutual respect and support, but I suppose even the Valar aren't perfect. So, that's what the dwarves are, but before I finish, I want to give you a little more of their history. As I said earlier, the fathers of the dwarves were laid with their wives, other than Durin, beneath mountains scattered across Middle-earth. And this is where mythology and biology clash. See, each of these dwarf fathers became kings of mighty dwarven realms, and there are later accounts of thousands and thousands of dwarves in Middle-earth. Enough that they could get a whole army to fight orcs underground. It's a whole thing. Well, as dwarven populations increase via the same method that all mammalian biological populations increase, building an entire population out of a single pair of dwarves would lead to the sorts of recessive traits most commonly seen within the oldest royal houses of Europe. So logically, there must have been more dwarves created at some point. Otherwise, the dwarves would have died out long before the events in Lord of the Rings. But Tolkien was interested in mythology, not genetics. So I'm going to continue with the story as he laid out in his notes. Each of the dwarf fathers established their clans. In the Blue Mountains, on the border of Beleriand, there were two clans, the Firebeards and the Broadbeams, who created the dwarven cities of Nogrod and Belagost, which feature heavily in the events of the Silmarillion. In the Far East, four more clans built their homes. Like the Firebeards and Broadbeams, they were sort of put into pairs. So in one area, you had the Iron Fists and the Stiffbeards, and in another location were the Blacklocks and Stonefoots. And that's really all we hear about them. They're just out in the east somewhere. But the last dwarf father, Durin, was alone. And he had no wife buried with him when he awoke, but somehow became the father and the first king of all the Longbeards. Again, mythology, not biology. Maybe he found some other dwarves that were clanless later or something. I don't know. Anyway, he awoke in Mount Gundabad, which is at the very north of the Misty Mountains, and this became a very holy place for all of the dwarves. The dwarven clans, despite these long distances between them, would often meet and had councils that were held in Mount Gundabad, though later it would be taken over by orcs, one of the many things that led to this big subterranean dwarf-orc war of the Third Age. But back in the First Age, it's a holy dwarven site. But Durin didn't stay there. He eventually traveled south, and looking into a deep pool outside of three tall mountains at the south of the Misty Mountains, he saw, reflected in the pool, a starry crown above his head, even in the day. And he took that as a sign that this is where he was going to build his kingdom. And it became Khazad-dûm, which would eventually become known as Moria after its fall. There is one more dwarven kingdom, not really kingdom, but a dwarven settlement that we learn about in the Silmarillion. It was not founded by one of the seven fathers of the dwarves. They were called the Petty Dwarves. They existed in Beleriand, and it is believed, Tolkien says, that it was most likely that these dwarves were exiles from other clans, likely the Firebeard and Broadbean clans. People who just didn't get along, didn't work out, they were exiled, maybe they committed some crime. They went out into Beleriand and set up their own little kingdom. They delved into this area called Nargothrond, and by the events of the Silmarillion, there were three of them left. For much of their history, elves, when they first got to Beleriand, had never met dwarves before, and they didn't know what they were and thought they were animals or beasts and hunted them. It's pretty grim stuff, but they also, I'm not saying it was deserved, absolutely wasn't deserved. In the Silmarillion, the last three petty dwarves are pretty reprehensible people. They're not good guys by any stretch of the imagination, but that is the eighth group of dwarves we learn about, the petty dwarves. So I'm going to end with a few other factoids about dwarven theology. Dwarves believe in reincarnation. They specifically believe that the seven dwarf fathers periodically are reincarnated and come back to lead the dwarves throughout their history. In the appendices of the Lord of the Rings, there's a timeline of dwarf kings of the Longbeard clan. And on that list, there are seven kings named Durin. But the dwarfs would all believe that this is the same Durin who lived so long in his first life. He was called Durin the Deathless, father of the Longbeards, and eldest of all of the dwarves. elves believe that when dwarves die, they return to the stone out of which Aule carved them originally. But the dwarves themselves say that Aule told the seven fathers before they slept that when they died, they would go to the halls of Mandos, like the elves do. And when Morgoth is finally vanquished after this last great battle, and the world of Aman is remade as it should have been made in the beginning, the dwarves would assist Aule in that work. So there you go, Cassie. I hope that answered your question about the dwarves. I love the dwarves. They're just so different from anything else in Middle-earth. And if you like dwarves, make sure you subscribe to this podcast, because we're going to have another dwarf-centric episode in the next couple of weeks. And if you, like Cassie, would like to submit a question, you can email it to lotramapod@gmail.com, and I'll do my best to answer it. And hey, leave a 5-star review, tell a friend, all of that good stuff that gets the word out about the show. It really does make a big difference. Follow me on Instagram and Threads. Both of those are at LOTRAMAPOD. Links for all of that is in the show notes. Thank you, as always, to Michael for our music and Lauren for our artwork. And that's all for this week. Iluvatar willing, I'll be back next week. See you then.